Good morning. My name is Christine Martin, and I'm the Executive Director of the California Telemedicine and eHealth Center. And I'm here to talk to you today about some of the factors that create an environment for advancing the adoption of technology. And in this particular case, I want to talk to you a little bit about trends and barriers in California about telemedicine reimbursement. And they're very applicable to the rest of the country. But before I start, I want to tell you just a little bit about CTEC. CTEC is an organization that has been really a pioneer and early adopter for telehealth and telemedicine. CTEC has been in existence for about 13 years and was selected by the California Endowment to have a $20 million investment in California in rural telehealth. And through that granting process, we were able to start about 125 rural telehealth patient sites in California. And I come to CTEC by way of state government, where I spent 11 years in the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, where I started the telemedicine program for the state prison system. So, does anybody here have a telemedicine program, or is, okay, anybody want to start one? Everybody wants to start one. So the objectives of the session today are to describe a little bit about a meta-analysis research literature review that we did on telemed reimbursement, and to identify some of the barriers that we found on telemedicine demand and utilization. California has had kind of an interesting environment around telemedicine and telehealth, and we might have been a bit ahead of some of the other states in its desire for public policymakers and state agencies and others to see adoption of telehealth. California has really been a national leader in telehealth policy. We had, I believe, the first telemedicine act in the country, which was passed in 1996, and it included provisions that required that private insurers have provisions for the reimbursement of telemed. We also have had a very large involvement by the foundations and the endowments in California wanting to invest in the development of telehealth. We have an FCC grant for $22 million, which we believe will bring up between 800 and 1,000 telemedicine sites around the state of California. We also have a governor who has been very supportive of telehealth and has had a number of executive measures that promoted the use of telemedicine. We also have a $200 million bond issue that was passed by the voters of the state that will allow the University of California Medical Schools to develop technology-based medical curriculums and to develop buildings, capital improvements that involve the use of telemedicine. So we have an environment that's pretty ripe to see telemedicine expand in a lot of areas, but there seemed to be a gap. When I reached CTEC a couple of years ago, I asked the question, if this is so good, and we all know it is, I mean, there's so much valuable support for what telemedicine does, not only for health systems, but for patients and providers, why is there a gap between what's currently available in the area of telehealth and what we know optimally could be available because it has so many applications? And so we wondered whether it's reimbursement or business models, or if it's payer reluctance, is there an issue around clinical efficacy, or are there operational issues that are creating barriers? And we were funded by the Blue Shield of California Foundation to do a collaborative policy development to ask the thought leaders and experts around the state, including consumers and payers and governmental agencies, what do we need to do to optimize telehealth in California? One of the things that was always brought up when you would just ask somebody casually, what do we need to do, is they would say reimbursement. That's it. That's the whole issue. We need reimbursement. And we felt like there were probably more issues than reimbursement, although we wanted to highlight those for policymakers. We also wanted to look at other things that might be creating barriers. So the desired result was the creation of a reimbursement policy and other recommendations that would support optimization of telehealth in California. The major components of our study was a meta-analysis of the available literature, statewide focus groups, a national reimbursement scan, and all of that was used with a group of collaborative policymakers, which was about 25 major stakeholders from around the state, and it included our Medi-Cal program, which was Medicaid in California, and Blue Cross, the California Hospital Association, the Rural Health Association, the Primary Care Association. It included representatives of all of the major stakeholders in the state. The meta-analysis was 22 literature reviews, and the recurring theme in those literature reviews is that telemedicine saves time and money for patients, but creates additional expense and delay for providers. I don't know if those studies that were done a few years ago would hold up today. I think it is true that it does save money for patients when they have to travel long distances, but I think we're beginning to see that there is some efficiency that can be gained on the provider side if you work with process flows and how to make things work better. It is certainly clear that on the patient side, they are doing a piece of work that they did not do before. So if you're seeing a specialist in a patient site where the specialist is not located, someone on that side is going to have to process that, and how does that site get reimbursed for the work that they do. Clinical efficacy in this analysis was a mixed bag. There was strong evidence for psychiatry, which I think all of us who are in the field agree, and for 21 other specialties, there was good evidence. Barriers to patient demand were quite interesting. The literature reviews cited a lack of awareness on the part of patients about telemedicine and how it could be used, and I think those of you who have worked in it will find that even though we're working with it every day and telemedicine is great and we think it's wonderful, when you just go out and ask people what telemedicine is, for a lot of people we're still in that stage of tele what, and so there isn't enough understanding on the part of patients about how that technology can affect them. There also tends to be a lack of referrals from primary care providers. And if we don't educate them well about how they can use the service, and if they don't see the benefit to them, they're not going to make the referrals. And so you're not going to see telehealth grow. There are concerns that are raised about privacy and confidentiality, although I think that they are reducing with every year that there are services available and people see that there are not major issues in that. And some of the literature reviews cited discomfort with the technology. Again, I think as time goes on that's passing. Most literature reviews cite patient satisfaction to be quite high with telehealth services once they receive them. Barriers to providers' demands included concerns about standards of care and liability, which in fact do remain concerns of providers when you first start working with them. That's one of the things that they will regularly raise. Interstate licensure issues is a very large barrier to telehealth implementation, the adoption of this technology. A provider who lives in one state in order to practice telemedicine in another state needs to have a license in that state. And that means that if we're going to fully optimize the use of telehealth around the country, providers need to be able to easily gain access to another state where they can see patients, particularly when we have specialties that are hard to come by and there's very few of them around the country. We want to be able to deploy them as best we can. So that has been cited and continues to be cited as a barrier for the optimization of telehealth. The lack of clinician training and recruitment was cited as one of the things that's a barrier. Many clinicians are not trained in the use of telehealth, and so they're not familiar with the technology and how to use it. And of course, reimbursement was cited, and it kind of cited it as a loop. If there's limited reimbursement, there's limited incentives on the part of the providers to want to use it, then this, which creates limited adoption, which creates limited revision of reimbursement rates. In California, the actual coding of a telemedicine visit by the Medicaid program, the use of the modifier to do billing was so small that they only showed that in a decade that they had seen 1,200 patients, which we know is sadly underreported. But it was so low that they were actually able to make a change in the reimbursement rate for telemedicine without putting it in the governor's budget because it never reached the threshold limit that required that it be put into the budget, that it was able to be done administratively. Then we went to focus groups, and we went to people around the state who are current providers, people who would like to be providers. We went to the payers. We went to lots of people and said, okay, how come we aren't using this enough? We had 90 participants, and we did the groups in Northern California and Southern California. Payers cited limited utilization data about telemedicine, that they didn't feel like they knew exactly what they were getting into. There is no standardized data collection mechanism in California, and as I said, for the Medicaid program, there was an underreporting of services. So there wasn't a really good database, and they felt that that was an issue for them. They had limited consumer requests. One of the insurance companies, major insurance companies, said, you know, we don't have anybody asking for this services. And if we had our people who purchase our service, either employer groups or individuals, say telemedicine is important to us, that they would take a better look at it. And that was about a year ago that they said that, and that still has not changed much for them, is that they're still not getting a lot of requests for service, although certainly, you know, in Washington and around the country, telemedicine is becoming a much hotter topic. And they have concerns about costs. There is some sense on the part of the payer that if we have more telehealth services available, that it will drive a demand that currently is not there, which will result in more cost to the insurance company, which kind of gets us back to that loop in healthcare, that if we intervene earlier and if we provide care that is preventive service or management services at an earlier time and we avoid an event down the road that's very costly, isn't that a better thing to do? And they are beginning to see that there's some data to support that, and we'll see how they respond. Potential providers and existing providers reported reimbursement as a large issue. Startup cost was also cited as a barrier. Getting the equipment, doing all of the development that you need to do in terms of changing your process and adding policies and having a telemedicine coordinator and really understanding how to put it into the workflow of your day-to-day practice was difficult, and they cited that as an issue. Some of them cited laws around licensing and other things, integrating it into operations, and probably one of the biggest things that you'll hear a lot about currently is sustainable business models, is when you go to see a health plan about telehealth, now one of the first things they will say is, we think telehealth is great. What's the business model? You know, is there a return on investment, or how is this going to happen? So you're going to see agencies like CTEC, which is a resource center, one of the HRSA-designated regional resource centers, looking for business models that provider groups and patient sites can apply to develop a business model. We also did a national reimbursement scan, and we came up with a Gordian knot and said that's kind of where we are with national reimbursement for telehealth, is that it is so tangled and so difficult to tease out that we need a solution that was used in the Gordian knot, where someone came up and took a knife and sliced right through it and said, okay, now it's not a knot anymore and you can stop trying to unravel the knot. There's been some movement towards expanding reimbursement, but the laws don't necessarily ensure that there's new practice. What we found in many states is that there's a law written at a high level, and then of course there's regulations that would apply it, which may dampen down a little bit what happens, and then there is the policy that's written on the regulation, and then there's the interpretation of the policy. So it's actually very hard to find out, state to state, what is actually being covered. So you may have a very expansive law that has a limited applicability when you look at how it's being applied. And there's limited impetus to change the status quo. It's hard to get people to make that kind of a shift when there's concern about what will it do to cost and that kind of thing. Medicaid is covered in 35 states for telemedicine. Medicare is expanding, and there's, as you probably know, there's federal proposals to further expand Medicare reimbursement for telehealth. There are state initiatives and private payers. Private pay reimbursement is now available in 12 states. Three of them passed over the summer, so we'll see what happens with that as more states offer that. Will there actually be programs available that comply? The major findings of this group were is that we have to deploy telehealth across a spectrum of services, that you can't look at one service, like services to rural communities, because there may not be a return on investment or even break even. It's the right thing to do. It gets the right healthcare to the right people at the right time. But when you look at it across home monitoring all the way up to what happens in ICUs, there's a very different picture of what it does to the cost of healthcare. There was one study that showed that $4.2 billion could be saved annually if we fully deployed telehealth. In California, that looked like $511 million. It's a lot of money. The second is that we're not going to achieve full potential of a service until it is implemented across all levels of service. So home monitoring, for example, there's a 50% reduction in emergency room visits in home monitored patients for congestive heart failure. There's also between a 15 and 44% reduction in mortality rates and lengths of stay in ICUs that are electronically supported. And when you look at the savings that would occur from those two ends, it really starts to support the middle, which is rural health care and continuing education and patient education programs and other kinds of management things. So we think it needs to be looked at a whole system rather than slices of the pie. Telemedicine, according to the findings, has been held to a higher burden of proof for clinical efficacy and cost effectiveness, which has limited its deployment, and that consumer demand is critical and will help drive full deployment. And I think that's been a really interesting one for us, is that if people don't know and if providers don't know what telemedicine is and what it can do, they are not going to move forward with it. So CTEC spends a lot of time doing public awareness and provider awareness around telehealth. Is my time up?
No.
Development is not without its challenges. The things that were most cited were reimbursement and payment strategies, organizational strategic integration, funding for development, replicable models. So CTEC has developed a seven-step process that will allow people to go through a model that uses all the best practices that have been developed over the last 10 years to help people replicate easily start to finish of putting in telehealth. Business models we talked about, program cost, and credentialing and privileging is a huge issue. If you want to have a physician providing services to a hospital or a hospital-based clinic, they have to be credentialed by that clinic and by that hospital system. And so if you have a clinician that wants to work at 10 or 15 different hospitals providing neurology for stroke services, there has to be credentialing at every one of those. Not only is it costly, but it's very time consuming. And most rural hospitals that could very much benefit from this don't have the staff to be credentialing 15 or 20 people. So it is a nationwide issue that CMS is looking at. The Joint Commission is looking at it, and there needs to, everyone is in agreement that there needs to be some kind of a change if we are actually going to allow the full deployment of our clinical resources across the country. This group came up with two recommendations, and I actually give them a lot of credit for being brave enough to just go ahead and say it. They said, quit doing this piecemeal. We need to use telehealth in every possible situation where patient care or access can be positively impacted. And we need to stop saying, we'll do it in rural area if you can show this, this, and this. We'll do it in dermatology if this, this, this. And that's how it's been, which I think is totally appropriate when you're very first adopting a technology. But we're over a decade into this, and now we need to kind of open it up so that more people can use it as they need to use it. And the second is that we need to eliminate coverage and reimbursement restrictions. So we need to be able to say it is a covered benefit, not that it should be more than what would be available through your health plan. But if your health plan covers a service and it can be done by telemedicine, that should be allowable and determined by the program and the provider. This is very similar to something that the National Rural Health Association released earlier this year that basically says the same thing. So there is some movement going forward to say, let's stop the piecemeal approach to getting reimbursement for the adoption of telehealth. The report also had 32 action steps, and I know my time is running out. We have an exhibit over in the exhibit area where we have copies of the policy brief that was developed by the collaborative with the policies and the 32 action steps. So I invite you to come over and pick up a copy of that. It's also available online there's four reports, and they're all available online at CTEC.org.